So I thought I would talk about how to practice with patience. I mean, I know we've been talking about patience over the course of the whole month so far, and I don't know if anyone has talked about how to practice with patience or how to even cultivate patience, since mostly if you look in the suttas and look for readings, they'll say, practice patience. Sort of like, okay. So, and patience itself, our English word has a kind of waiting quality to it, like a restraint that you have. But I think if we practice patience with a little bit more softness, we can begin to see that patience itself is both energetic. It's almost like in Al's poem, when he was so young and he was sitting there, you could almost feel the energy he had as he is waiting for these mice to crawl over him. Only a little boy would think of doing. But nonetheless, as he's waiting for the mice to crawl over him and his stillness, and yet how alert he was, how very mindful. And it's this quality of patience, of waiting for the mice to choose to use his body as the pathway. And both the understanding that he was in the way, so eventually they were going to have to cross his body in order to get to the food. The patience is this kind of soft waiting that is something beyond just this forced restraint that we can make ourselves do. And that's what I want to talk about. So first, the first thing I think that this patience is requiring is, you can think of it as pausing. So you have to learn to interrupt habit. It's like his body is interrupting the habit of how the mice would go and get their food. And he has to both interrupt his probably anxiousness to make the mice come and use his body, since he came up with the grand idea of how he was gonna do this, spend this summer. But he has to pause. It's kind of a patience with waiting until the moment arises. So there's a pausing, and I want to talk a little bit about this pausing and what this pausing can represent. So, years ago, I think many of you know, or some of you may know, I started doing Insight Dialogue. Insight Dialogue is a meditative practice you do with someone else, and the two of you begin to support each other in building concentration and samadhi, this kind of stillness. And it's done in pairs, but at the time I first learned it, I just was too busy to get into another group and do another pairing. That was just it. It was enough for me to come to Sims every week, and I certainly wasn't joining another group. So I decided to have this relationship with my body. And the first guideline, there are six guidelines in Insight Dialogue, and the first guideline is pausing, is learning to pause. So when you're sitting across from someone, the two of you are practicing together what it's like to pause, what it's like to interrupt habit. And when we're speaking, habit is very strong. We just run off with whatever our thoughts are. So when you do this practice of pausing and you're speaking with another person, the habit energy of wanting to just say a whole bunch of stuff and get it right is so strong that pausing is something you can learn to do by interrupting yourself and stopping yourself in the middle of that flow, that habit, impulse. But when you're sitting there by yourself, it's just you and your body, there's no real incentive to help you stop whatever you're doing. And so I used to cultivate this idea of pausing my thoughts, pausing my opinions, pausing. I just paused whatever was happening. I just would insert this pause. And in order for me to insert this pause, I had to learn to relax, to soften. Wait a minute. I came up with all these little phrases. Wait a minute. It's okay. Just a minute. Hold up. That's what I would say to myself, constantly putting this pause in to begin to interrupt habit, just out of the blue. It didn't really matter to me that I would go back into doing the habit, whatever it was. It was the interruption that I was trying to learn how to cultivate. And in patience, we are trying to learn how to interrupt whatever's happening in some moment. Two things have to happen for us to interrupt something, though. One, you have to know something's happening. That's the basic. That's just the first ground floor. We have to know something's happening. And that is this getting interested in what you're doing. And I believe this is what the Buddha's foundations of mindfulness were pointing to. Because when I look at these mindfulness, there are four of them. When I look at what they're pointing at, they are not pointing at getting anything correct. They're not pointing at this is how you're supposed to do it. What they're pointing at is the things that are going on in any given moment. So the first one is the body, learning to know there is a body. Learning to know that your body is actually in a posture, that there's actually something happening with the body, because usually, if you're anything like me, you are trapped in your head. So learning to shift your attention and notice this body becomes the first kind of idea to begin to see what you could interrupt. You could interrupt the flow in this body, and learning to know the body as a body. Second foundation is feeling tones. It is the impulse. Feeling tones bring with them the impulse to fix something or get rid of something that's unpleasant or get something that's pleasant. It's just the impulse of it. Or we basically just ignore everything else. We all kind of know that as practitioners in learning how to practice with the feeling tones. But you have to know the feeling tone is present. So this establishment of mindfulness is this establishing an awareness that feeling tone is present. Excuse me, and it's present all the time. There's no, maybe I have feeling tones, maybe I don't. You always have feeling tones. Mostly, it's neutral, so we don't notice them. It's just, I'm just going through, I don't feel anything. Let something happen that you don't like, feeling tone, come really quick. If something you do like, feeling tones, come really quick. But everything else, we're just kind of going along, neutral, nothing. I don't have feeling tones. That is the neutral feeling tone. So learning to recognize that neutral feeling tone and know it's there, you can begin to pause and notice it. Pause and notice it. That the third one is thinking, and this is why I was hoping you guys had some drama going on in your thoughts. Because we have a tendency in this practice to treat thinking like it's a bad thing. Like somehow, if I'm thinking, I'm not doing a very good job meditating. As if you could not think. But that's like saying I could have ears that work and I can't hear anything. Or I have eyes I can see out of, but I don't want to see anything. It doesn't work like that. Mind just thinks, just like ears hear and eyes see, body senses, nose smell. It's just what they do. And the mind thinks, and it's always going to think. What we have to learn is how to pause and interrupt our obsession with that thinking so that we could notice other experiences that are happening in any given moment. So learning to allow the mind's thinking and find an anchor that helps you notice also the present moment, you could use mind as an anchor. And the Buddha said it's the third foundation, mind. Knowing thinking, knowing emotion, knowing thought is present. So this last one is dhammas, knowing your relationship with an experience, your reactivity or non-reactivity, but knowing that you're having a relationship with experience. You're not just moving through, you're actually in relationship with this experience. And whatever that relationship is, it is what's controlling your behavior. So when we're thinking about cultivating patience, we are learning to interrupt this kind of blank, unconscious, moving through life without even knowing what we're doing. That we're learning to actually know what's happening. It doesn't matter what's happening. It's the knowing what's happening that's far more important. So even if you are having some reactivity because you heard something you didn't like, it's not this idea that I shouldn't be having reactivity because I learned something I didn't like. It's not that. It is, do you know you are being reactive? And if you know you're being reactive, do you know there's an unpleasant vedana feeling term pushing you towards this reaction? Okay, and you know that. And can you feel it in the body? As distinctly as him, as Al lying there, still motionless, noticing all the little dust as he's waiting for the mice to come. There's a way in which we can begin to know how we are relating to something. And the importance is, if you know that, you can decide in that moment whether you want to continue. You can't decide if you want to continue yelling at somebody if you don't even know you're yelling at them. And believe me, we don't know we're yelling at someone. Everybody else knows, but we don't know. We think we're just talking, getting our point across, trying to, you know, let people know what's going on. We don't necessarily think we're yelling at someone. But after a while, you can learn to hear yourself yelling at someone. You can't necessarily stop it, but you begin to know you hear yourself yelling at someone. And then after a while, you begin to feel the energy building up that causes you to yell at someone. And then even greater still, you begin to feel the impulse that pushes you towards that. And you can choose in that moment not to yell. You may want to yell, but you can choose not to. Because the establishment of mindfulness is knowing what is happening in that moment. And we establish it by knowing the body, knowing feeling tones, knowing the mind and thoughts and what's going on emotionally, and then knowing our relatedness to the moment. That would be the Dhammas, the fourth foundation. So knowing what's happening is one part of what you have to have in order to cultivate a pause, to interrupt something. The second part is you have to be able to relax. And relax is kind of a weird word. It's almost like, you know, it's a forced demand that you do something. So I didn't like that word, relax. You know, it just never sat with me very well. Soften, on the other hand, I know what soften means. I know I can notice Vedana and soften around it. And it allows for me to interrupt and bring this pause in. I know I can soften around all of my irritations, frustrations. I can soften around when I really, really want something really bad. It's constantly talking to me. I can soften around that energy. Even if it's upbeat, positive, like if I'm going to go see my granddaughter and I'm all happy, I can soften around the whole thing. Because usually when I get to her house, I got to wait quite a bit of time for her mom to bring her out. So it's sort of like I'm all ready. I've texted her. I'm on my way. 20 minutes. That's how long it's going to take. Give me 20 minutes. When I get here, I'm here. Okay. Then the clock is now ticking for the next 20 minutes as I wait for her to come out. So that I can feel that excitement and that wanting, and then the anger and frustration if it doesn't happen. The point of patience is not I shouldn't be frustrated, nor I shouldn't be all excited. It's learning to know and pause this kind of allowing, softening around that energy that's there. You're softening around it. It's just part of the ebb and flow that we go through as humans, this emotional roller coaster we're on. So we have to learn to soften around it and know that we're even having this kind of relatedness. This is, so pausing is like the first part that we have to sort of learn how to pause. And you're practicing patience by practicing this pausing. Pausing. You're practicing patience by pausing. So the second thing that we have to learn to cultivate and practicing in this, Rodney used to call this observing. So he used to say that you had to observe what's happening. And this is a different quality of being with experience. So we're going to do a little test here just to show you what I mean. So wherever you're at, you can see if you can listen to a sound, find a sound that's happening, even if it's the sound of silence, and listen to that sound. There's a particular quality that happens when you're listening to something, because there's a little mental note in your mind. Whether you pay attention to that or not, there's a little mental note, like someone sitting on your shoulder. I'll use in here, in the hall. Van Gogh, Van Gogh, Van Gogh, Van Gogh. It's just constantly saying that to me. Van, 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 traffic, traffic, van, van, van. That's what I'm listening to. I'm not really listening or observing the sound. I'm listening to the mind telling me about the sound. So now, see if you can just let go of listening to anything and just notice hearing. Use that word, hearing, right? Hearing. Hearing. When you begin to hear, you hear all kinds of stuff. And there's not very much labeling on it because there's too much going on. The ears hear a lot. All kinds of creaks and ticks and dings and all kinds of sounds. That, I don't know if I told you guys this, but Sharon Salzberg one time came and gave a retreat, non-residential. This was years ago, and she was at the, when we used to do the Shoreline Community Center, big old huge room, and she gave this retreat, and she had us all listen for sounds. And then afterwards, she asked us to call out how many sounds we heard. Of course, I knew I had heard the most. I mean, I knew it. I said, 7! It was terrible. People heard 15, 16. I was thinking, who, what, they made those numbers up. No way they heard that many sounds. There wasn't that many sounds. She told us to do it again. So we did this quiet, open your ears up, hearing sounds. Okay. Maybe they were right. 15 I could get to. And then I said, I heard all the sound. 15! Of course, nope. People were like, 24! 26! I'm like, there's no way! No way! And every time I would go back into the silence, I would hear more. Every time. She just kept getting us quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter. And we could hear more and more and more and more. So in a way, we're learning to let the sense doors just tell us what they're experiencing. That's what observing is. Observing is being able to have the bare experience of something without all the direct commentary telling us. Because that commentary that tells us everything that's going on misses 90% of what's happening. And so learning to trust your sense doors to tell you what's happening. This is the gift that the Buddha was pointing to as a means for learning to be in the present moment and cultivating this patience. There's no better way to cultivate this than seeing, hearing, and meditation, mindfulness, just practicing, just sitting, not even the big to-do. I do mindfulness meditation in the airports all the time. I just sit there. And just see how many sounds I can hear. Just sit there. How many things do I see? Like, how many colors can I see? How many shapes can I see? I just am seeing. I could look. We could do the same thing with eyes. You can look at something. You're looking, 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 looking. And of course, your mind's going to say, cushion, 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 cushion. But if you just let go and just use the word seeing, just seeing, 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 seeing. Gradually the mind begins to let go and the eyes, it's wondrous what they see. They see all kinds of shadows, shapes, just, it's all very fluid. They can see softness. They can see aliveness. I mean, I learned this in 9 bodies. You can see aliveness. You go to the grocery store in the produce section. You look at the produce. You know what's dead produce and what's alive produce. You're not taking the dead produce. You're going to take the alive produce. You can see it, whether it's alive or not. You don't need the mind to tell you that it's alive. You can see that. We can perceive all kinds of emotions we can perceive in other people. There are so many things that we can perceive through sight that we don't even need the mind to tell us. We already know. But yet we're so conditioned to have the mind tell us what's happening that we don't really use our sense doors the way we could. And mindfulness is this quality of, instead of having the mind up here and all the other sense doors down here, mindfulness is this great leveler, levels it all out. So your other sense doors are equally important to you as the mind. And when your other sense doors are equally important to you as the mind, you could sit with thoughts in the mind and they don't distract you at all. You're not even listening to them. You don't even care. There are other things that are happening, other experiences that the sense doors are happening that you're not even interested in what the mind is thinking. But it just takes practice beginning to observe what are all the sensory experiences in this moment and learning to connect to that. So the last part that I think we cultivate in order to cultivate patience is this ability to allow the present moment to be. This is maybe the hardest part of cultivating patience, because inevitably our mind would say, I can't just allow some unpleasantness to happen. That doesn't make any sense. But what you are actually allowing is you're not allowing unpleasantness to happen. You're allowing the present moment to come into full view so you can decide what to do, not based on habit, but based on what's actually happening. So all of us as meditators, we know some itch comes on your sit, the dreaded itch. And everything in you has taught you, don't scratch that. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because if you do, it's as if the mind is now triggered to give you another itch, so you have another thing to scratch. And it just keeps doing it until eventually you have to stop. So you know the itch comes and you're like, okay, I'm not going to scratch it. And we have learned over time as practitioners that not scratching the itch, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. When you first start sitting, it's the end of the world, not scratching that itch. It seems like it is a mandatory thing that we have to do. We cannot sit here. And then over time, it changes and it's not such a big deal. So you got to ask yourself, is it really unpleasant, the itch? It eventually goes away. Is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? We have sensations that we swear are unpleasant. There are meditative sensations that feel so pleasant, and after a while, you hate them. You wish they would go away. How in the world can you wish something pleasant would go away? That's what PT is. As you get deeper in concentration, PT has this pleasurable feeling, but then it's like the mind, it's like an itch. If you get too caught in it, it will keep going, keep going, keep going, and then it gets too much and you want to stop. So there's a way in which what we think of as pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, that's not even important, it's not necessarily true. And the willingness to just allow experience to be there helps us begin to judge what really needs to be dealt with and what it just passes on its own. We learn how to cultivate patience because we learn how to discern what needs a response and what does not. What is part and parcel of impermanence and what is something that needs to be dealt with. This is the learning that the only way we can learn this is if we begin to cultivate this patience and begin to cultivate a willingness to steady ourselves no matter what's arising and see. Let's just observe this. Let's just soften, relax, just kind of observe what's happening, let it be, kind of allowing it, and then see from that, from the present moment, what's the appropriate response. If we don't learn to cultivate this patience, then we begin to be stuck in the impulse of our natural underlying tendencies towards grasping after whatever we like and pushing away what we don't. We can't help it. It's just the nature of an underlying tendency as human beings to just grasp after what we want. Babies will tell you in a heartbeat what they don't like. And they mean it. And they will give you a second or two to figure it out. But after that, they are going to be clear that they don't like it. And we do all the stuff to help them settle down, fix whatever the problem is. And then we fix the problem and then they're okay. So it's no wonder that we're not taught that fix the problem and we're okay. Fix the problem and we're okay. And so that kind of fix the problem, we're okay mentality is what we end up with. Cultivating patience is interrupting that. Cultivating patience is this cultivating a willingness to be in the present moment and see what is the appropriate response. And it may not be doing anything. It may be just being still and alert and awaiting for the mice to figure out they're going to have to get over that body in order to get to the food. Just a simple waiting to see. This is what I think we're cultivating. It's not easy. This is kind of the last piece I want to share, and then we'll see if there's any comments. But it's not easy cultivating patience when the whole world around you is freaking out. I mean, over the top, freaking out. It's not easy to cultivate patience. But you're not cultivating patience in order to somehow or another rise above everybody else, to somehow or another be a better being than all other beings. You are cultivating patience for one reason, so you can handle what's happening. Do you see? You're not cultivating patience to be better than. You're cultivating patience because we are all on some level freaking out, and yet that freak out will not help us. So there's a cultivating patience in order to diminish the dukkha, the suffering, and allow us to live with what's going on, whatever that looks like, whatever that is. So you have to come to places like this so that you can cultivate patience, because here, cultivating patience is acceptable. It is a part of who we are. It's a shared value, a shared practice. And then you're not crazy, and you can go out in this world that is crazy and be patient with it. Because in the long run, we're all living in whatever happens together. Doesn't really matter. We're all going to live with it. And so no one person can make the world be the way we want it to be. So we all end up living with it. And that means we're going to all need some patience. So let's sit a moment here and then we'll see if there's any comments. I have to share a quote from Trungpa Rinpoche. I love this quote. He says, "My advice to you is not to undertake the spiritual path. It's too difficult, too long, and too demanding. I suggest you ask for your money back and go home. This is not a picnic. It is really going to ask everything of you. So it's best not to begin. However," and this is for everybody on Zoom, everybody in the hall, "if you do begin, it's best to finish." I love Trump sometimes. His wisdom is off the chain to me. He reminds me of Milarepa, who was so rough. Anyway, let's see if there's any comments or questions or anything like that.
If anybody in the room has a question, I'll bring you the mic. And online, you can raise your hand, electronic hand.
Oh, I like it. We're all being patient. It's good.
I'll just throw something silly out there, and I don't know if it's silly or not, but when you talk about our minds and distractions, there's another mind sitting on the table over there that we're carrying around with us all the time. And that mind, I think, is affecting my own patience many times, because instead of being patient, I'll just pick that up and take care of whatever distraction's going on. So,
yes, that mind is the mind that you are questioning. That mind is the mind that our whole society has cultivated.
Yeah.
It cultivates us. It's cultivated by society. It's not cultivated by practice. It's cultivated by society. It's just everybody's mind is like that. But that mind is trapped in its own understanding, and it will never understand anything outside of it. It's just limited. So it's sort of like, you know, listening to a little kid try to negotiate what you should do, a choice you should make in your life. I mean, they might have some wisdom. I could see the wisdom of Al lying there waiting for the mice to cross over. I could see some wisdom in that. There's some mindfulness, and it takes some practice to do it in stillness, and probably helped him get through the long, hot summer in Australia. But that is not the mind that can make major decisions about life in general. But most of us, the mind that we're operating out of is still a child's mind. Because once we made that decision as a kid, we never question it ever again. Once we get locked into an understanding, a view, an opinion, a belief, an assumption, we never question it, and we just follow it. So this course of cultivating patience is actually supporting you to have the capacity to challenge that mind and see if it's correct in this moment. It may have been correct when you were younger, but it may not be really applicable in this moment. And that's what we're trying to see, what is applicable in this moment, so that when we're moving about our lives, we're not just following our impulsive childhood beliefs that were kind of given to us by other people and other circumstances. We're trying to see what applies in this moment right here. And that can be very different.
I find it requires taking a break from that thing.
The computer?
The computer. I've done that. Yeah, I've found that if I'm impatient with something that's going on, and I just keep getting the feedback about it, but I don't leave it alone. I don't let it go. If I let it go, then the patient will start arising, and then I can start seeing it better.
Well, something I want to point to that you can see is what you're feeling is the entanglement. You're feeling that pushing, that fighting, that entanglement. That's feeling tone. This is what mindfulness is all about. So you're establishing in that moment, actually, mindfulness. Either you're noticing your thinking mind and all the frustration that's showing up, or your emotional energy, or you're noticing the feeling tone of how unpleasant this is, or you're just feeling how tense and tight the body is, right? And you have this sense your relatedness with the computer has gotten too entangled, too out of hand. And then you can move away. Notice also, when you don't have all that tension, you don't have all that tightness, you don't have that unpleasantness, when it's neutral, and see if you can move away when it's neutral, or at least become aware of it, right?
Right, right.
Because what you're cultivating is an ability to be mindful with the computer regardless. And it's not the computer that's causing all that tension. It's something that's happening in you,
right,
that's frustrated with that's bringing it all up, some grasping for it.
Absolutely.
So that noticing that you're doing, by noticing when the tension's coming up, when the struggle is coming up, or whatever's happening that leads you to move away, that is mindfulness. That's what mindfulness is doing. But you also want to notice the other end of it when you're lost in it, because that's the same thing. It's the same kind of quality. We're drowning. One, we're drowning because we're struggling with it. The other one, we're drowning because we're not doing anything. And I've sat on my computer playing solitaire for hours, don't even know I'm doing it. Right. Then all of a sudden I'm like, it's dark outside. outside. When I started, it was bright as day. Now it's dark outside. What happened? What happened to the whole day? I didn't see it. I didn't even see the time passing. It's just all of a sudden, it's nighttime, and I don't know what happened. That is no different than the tension. So you almost have to be grateful for the tension because it helps you see it. And then have some kind of alarm so that you can see it when there's no tension. That's what you want to see, both of them. One, you're drowning and you don't see it. And the other one, you're struggling and you can see it.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got two down here.
Okay.
Go ahead, and then we'll go to right in front of you.
Hi. I'm so grateful to be here and to listen to every word coming from you. Is like nectar to my ear. It feels like an affirmation of things that have been happening and the cultivating of something that I wasn't even aware of because I've never did Buddhism, you know, practiced Buddhism. But my children have taught me a great deal of patience. And I'm so grateful for them because I wasn't very patient, and I feel like there's patience, cultivating patience within the cultivating. you said something really poignant to me about feeling like you're not better by practicing this patience. And that hit a chord in me where sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm practicing this patience and I'm getting good at it. And then I expect other people to get on with it or to tell them, I mean, hurry me to tell them how great it is.
That's right.
And they should do the same thing.
You should do the same thing. Let's fix everybody.
Like a conversation I just had with my partners, ex-partner, but it was very, I heard that when it was said that, you know, your process is not mine, it's different.
Yes.
And that is very humbling.
It is.
And I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm maybe on the right track, and there's a lot more to learn and a lot more patience to cultivate.
Yes, that's
so
right.
I feel like I came in the right place.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's good practice. That's good practice.
Thank you.
You know, Rebecca Bradshaw one time told me, I poo-pooed this kind of practice because I was new, and all I really did was sat and thought the whole time I was meditating, so-called meditating. I was just really going to my happy place and being happy. That's it. Just thinking of nice things, thinking of really good things, thinking of everything working out okay. And I just didn't respect any of that practice. And she told me, don't look down on that practice, Tori. It is cultivating the paramis. And you need to cultivate the paramis in order to build strong concentration. Strong practice. So this idea that you're cultivating the practice, you see it everywhere. Just the idea of us saying we're going to look at patience for a month. You see patience everywhere. You see where you don't have patience and you see where you do have patience. And all of it, whether you didn't have patience in some moment or you did have patience in some moment, all of it is correct. It's all helping you understand what is the nature of this patience and cultivate it in such a way that you grow in your ability to feel into it in any given moment. So yeah, it's all very much part of the whole practice. It's all part of practice. And that patience, even with the patience that you have with your partner, your ex-partner, you end up needing that same patience with your own mind when it's lost in some tangent and you really want to come back and listen to, you know, fan and traffic and stuff like that. And it's lost in there. You have to have this patience to allow it to gradually come back to the present moment.
Yep.
That's right. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of ping off the computer thing. This is just real quick. I've tried to cultivate my patience, I guess, lately by actually like meditating on my phone, you know, just looking at it and kind of like instead of like reacting to it, just kind of like feeling through each little icon. And there's a lot there.
There's
like,
a lot
it's like
there.
A microcosm of your brain is just sitting there, and it's kind of an interesting thing. And it's never worked very well, but I think it might be on the right track of kind of a way to kind of like learn about yourself.
Oh, it is definitely on the right track. We used to say, before the pandemic, we used to tell practitioners at the end of retreats, don't pick those phones up, don't turn them on, leave them off. And there was just this negativity towards devices that was just constant, like almost like teachers would be like, I don't even have a cell phone. And then the pandemic hit, and all of a sudden Zoom was like a gift to us, and all these devices became these gifts where we could talk to each other, that it gave us all this ability to reevaluate our understandings with these devices. And it's more of, like you say, you just want to know, what is this device doing to you? You have to look at it. So I always, when I give the cell phones back at retreats, I always have them feel the weight of it. Turn it on. Listen to all the little ding, 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 dings, and get the sense that this dinging is calling you. It is your life. It's an extension of our lives, and we are connected to it. I mean, I can feel the misery of the idea of losing my phone. Just the thought of it, I can feel the tension of that. And that's more than just a casual connection. It's not just a striker. It's not just some random little, you know, egg clock you can have. It's not that. It's more like these Buddha statues and the Kuan Yin. We have a sacredness in them. And so what you're doing, spot on, learning to see what's pulling you about this phone. One way or the other, whether you get pulled or you don't get pulled. Yeah? I'm going to take this one question online, and then I'll go, and then we'll go to you. Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, I was so intrigued by the way that you spoke to us, the guidance that you gave us at the beginning of our sit. And I just want to check it out if I follow the drift here, that the mind will think, just does it think on its own whether we're paying attention to it?
Yes.
And that's okay, right?
That's okay. Doesn't have anything to do with you.
Okay.
Think about it. Do your ears hear even if you don't
pay
attention to it? Does the eye see even if you don't pay attention to it? And the mind, what the Buddha called, cognizes. It cognizes whether you pay attention to it or not. What we are learning in practice is to not give it so much respect. You know, we can hear things, see things, feel things, and we don't even care about it. But if I think something, we think it's somehow me. And that's what we're trying to separate out of. Not think. Not get so glued to our thinking that we think whatever we think is us.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
It's not you.
And it may be true or not, or to have relevance or no, or be... I'll just hold habit stuff. Okay. Thank you.
So if you begin to let thinking, noticing thinking in the background, calling it thinking... Right? Hearing, seeing, yeah. Thinking. You let thinking happen in the background. You can still hear in the foreground. You don't need to, it's not always only thinking. And if you do notice that the thinking is just overwhelming the sense doors, then that's thinking in the foreground. But if you listen, you'll be able to hear in the background sounds, people talking, traffic, other sounds, creaking, all kinds of little sounds. And that's what you're learning. Let thinking be in the foreground or background.
Thank you. That's so helpful.
Yep. Good.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Tori. Thanks for your talk.
You're welcome.
In my life and in my practice lately, I've been noticing the feeling of being out of my comfort zone, and it feels beneficial sometimes. And it makes me think about the mice in the poem and how they kind of had a kind of patience and how they had to be out of their comfort zone to crawl over this child. And so can you talk about patience and how that relates to being out of your comfort zone?
Yeah. It's a... I guess the way I would say it is, out of our comfort zone is better thought of as out of the mind's comfort zone, right? The mind has a comfort zone of what it thinks it should be happening. And when we start getting outside the mind's comfort zone, then it starts freaking out. That's what's doing the freaking out. It's not really us. It is this mind that has a opinion about how life should be and what's right and what's wrong. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's just the nature of the way we're raised. And we're raised with certain thoughts and beliefs and ideas, and this is the way it should be. But we live in a world that's impermanent and always changing and rearranging. So things that we think are this is the way it should be always bumps up against the reality of impermanence, that it may or may not be like that. When we bump up against that reality, it's the mind that's outside of its comfort zone. So we are learning, and it takes the patience to learn how to do sort of like the mice, nose up against it, look around it, figure it out, take a look, check it out, see, and gradually we, just like the mice, will trust it and realize nothing is amiss here. It's just a big something in the way, but we just have to climb over it to get to the grain. And then they do. And the kid wasn't going to hurt them, just wanted to see them cross over him, you know? And so that nosing around that we're doing in the present moment is to help us distinguish reality and is there danger in this moment in reality, or is this just some impulse that thinks this is dangerous just because I thought it was dangerous when I was younger. Do you see what I'm pointing to? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I understand that feeling of being outside the comfort zone, that's just something that's happening in the mind at that moment. And the world is always out of control anyway. It's just the mind.
It's sort of like that. It is what a therapist gave me coined a phrase for me that I've used the rest of my life. She used to say, Tori, I want you to double check. Double check just to see. Because I was a scaredy cat. I thought everything was dangerous and nothing safe and I'm not going to be safe. And so impulsively, I would shove anything that was outside of my comfort zone. I'm shoving it away. So she would say, I want you to double check. Double check that. Did you double check that? And I've been in some pretty difficult situations for the mind, very afraid. And I would ask myself, double check, Tori. Did you double check? Are you sure this is what's going on? And that impulse to begin to double check and see if really this is dangerous. When I first used to come to Sims, I always thought that people were going to come up and just smack me. I was just in a room with 200 people, and I'm sitting there. I'm scared of everything anyway. So I'm sitting in this room. There's 200 people. And all my mind would say is, somebody's going to come over and hit you. Someone's going to come over any minute now and hit you. And I'd be sitting there having these panic attacks. And then one day it dawned on me, I should open my eyes and see. So I would open my eyes. Everybody is sitting there in their own minds thinking about stuff. Somebody's going to come hit them, whatever. And then I would close my eyes. I would open my eyes, and it's peaceful, quiet. No one's even looking at me. Close my eyes. 2 seconds in, someone's going to come over and hit you. Somebody's going to come over and hit you. And open your eyes. So there would be this way I had to learn to open and close my eyes until I felt reassured that I begin to trust what my eyes were saying and not what the mind is saying. I could begin to sense nobody's moving, so I could see nobody moving, but I believed everybody was moving, and then I could sense nobody's moving. And that sense of safety didn't come from me convincing the mind, it's all safe, don't worry about it. It came from the other sense doors helping me see that I'm not in danger. That's how I begin to see it. So you sort of use your other sense doors to double check the present moment, what's actually happening, and not just the mind's projection of what could happen if we don't, you know, change this. Do you see? Yeah. Welcome. Well, that seems like a lot. Doesn't it seem like a lot? Do we have any announcements?